if you're not watching the live version, the live video version of the Project Scars podcast, welcome, by the way, to the Project Scars podcast. You are really missing out, Brett, because you're missing, you know, something like 10 to 15 seconds of all of the hosts doing a little chair dancing to our rocking intro.
Like truly some of the lamest middle-aged Midwestern roots chair dancing you ever saw in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's super fun. It's my favorite thing about the show. Hi, I'm Seth Miersma. I am one of your two hosts today of the Project Scars podcast. Joining me, as usual, Mr. Brett Evans. Brett, how are you today?
Good. I have a fully functioning Wi-Fi system, so I probably won't drop out in the last 10 minutes like I did last week. Let's see what happens.
I love that. Yeah, it was you and Kyle holding down the podcast fort last week, and I appreciate it. I was off on vacation. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But it's the two of us today, as Kyle is now out and about on a car event that perhaps we'll hear a little bit about next week or in a future episode. But before we get into that, I just want to say that the Project Scars podcast is presented by CarID.com. It's a super exciting time right now at CarID.com, Brett, because we've got IDs going on. This is our biggest sale of the year. Started August 15, and it's running through September 9. You're not going to want to miss it. There are huge discounts on parts and accessories from brands you love for you to trick out your car, truck, or SUV, a little bit like we're going to do later in the show today. There's also a lot of other deals, some free shipping on stuff too. So go ahead and check out the site. Right at the homepage of CarID.com, you can see discounts and links to coupon codes and things like that. So there's never been a better time if you're looking to do some shopping for new parts or accessories or maintenance items for your vehicle. Do it right now. We'll do it after the show. Give us that courtesy, please. So we're gonna have a fun little exercise today that we sort of threw together, earlier today, this morning. That I think is going to be a good time. But before that, I don't know. I was gone last week. I was in Maine. So I didn't hear what was happening. Were you driving anything interesting? Any more updates in terms of personal cars, motorcycles?
Not a ton on the personal front, but we did talk a little bit about OEM plus mods, which is right exactly when my internet cut out. So I didn't get to plug our household's latest OEM plus mod, but I can do that now. So my boyfriend Noah is a big BMW guy. He drives an E90 BMW 328i sedan. It's the last naturally aspirated straight six that BMW put in a 3 Series. Very cool car. His is a sport package with a manual transmission. The only thing he doesn't really like about it is it shares a garage with my car, which is a Z4 3.0 SI. Same engine, but it has the 3-stage manifold air intake. So you get 25 more horsepower and like 10 or 15 pound feet of torque extra. So he's always been a little bit jealous of that until last weekend.
In other words.
Exactly. Yeah. Until last weekend when he ended up finding a junkyard 3-stage manifold and bought a good condition used oil cooler off of eBay. And he put that on his car. So now his car, pending some final tuning, will make as much power and torque as mine and just be a darn cool four-door sports sedan. So this was a cool OEM plus mod. We talked about it last week a little bit, mixing and matching, the best of the best from a bunch of different automakers. Kyle called it factory floor Lego, I think, which is pretty cool. So So we had a good time talking about OEM plus. I'm really stoked. We haven't done the final tuning on the software tuning on the 3 Series yet, but once it gets done, it's going to be a ripping little sports sedan, and I'm really excited for that.
Is that an upgrade that a lot of people do?
It's not unheard of. Noah's always been a little bit reticent to try it because we live in California, and California obviously has some pretty strict regulations regarding software tuning and emissions and air intake, and everything falls into that. So, friend of the podcast, friend of CarID.com, Peter Nelson, has a car with the same engine in it. He's got a 128i, and he did the 3-stage manifold with he kind of cobbled together a 30i tune, like a 130i tune, even though that car never existed. And it passes smog just fine. It's an OEM tune, so it doesn't get flagged by the computer, and it passes the sniff test and everything. So when Peter was able to do it on his car, Noah decided he was going to try it on the 3 Series, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. The tuning is done, you know, the car still runs and drives like a normal 328i. So, you know, we don't obviously no change there, which is good because that means we can kind of just run it and it'll be fine. But once the software gets done, it'll be fun. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, that's super cool. I also love that generation. Someday soon, we got to do a BMW sort of brand breakdown. We've been promising those for a little while, but E90 is my favorite. I think probably my favorite 3 Series, honestly, like if I'm really truly honest with myself about like everything that I like in a car, the ability to actually like drive it, daily drive it, the performance on hand. And I remember having a phone call with my boss years ago when I was driving a 328i sedan, like just a very much like Noah's, it sounds like sport package sedan.
For work? Was this like a
review? Yeah, press car. Cool. And at the time it was on the way out. Like we knew that the E90 was almost done. So it was kind of like end of life for that car anyways. And I called up my boss, who's a big car guy, and was like, man, I'm realizing like how many people get away with buying this car if they're, you know, like are partnered, married, like have kids or something, because it's such a practical thing. It doesn't look the part at all. But because that engine is so good and the transmission was so wonderful, like it really is like a subtly handling, like awesome to drive sports car that's super, super utilitarian as well. So
I will probably die on the hill that the N52 engine, which is what that car has, is possibly BMW's like best engine of all time. And I'm not going to say, like, that's a bold claim to make when there's things like the S65 V8 and the you know, all these other all these other cool awesome engines out there, but the N52 kind of just like nails like the BMW hallmarks. It's super smooth, it revs so fast because there's a lot of like lightweight, like forged and magnesium and like a lot of lightweight parts in the engine.
Yeah,
it breathes so well, and it just feels like a BMW should feel. So, big fan of the N52. And yeah, you said it exactly right. Like, it's just no one would expect that car to be just kind of as like underhandedly good as it is. Like, it just kind of like flies under the radar, but it's so good. Such a
little bit of a sleeper, just not a sleeper in the like, you know, 0 to 60 kind of way that we're used to talking about it.
I mean, you're not gonna like blow the doors off of like most modern sports sedans. I bet even like a previous generation Camry V6 could outrun it, but like it just does everything so nicely.
Right on. Well, that sounds like a ton of fun. I want to share one quick. We don't need to belabor vacation time in Maine. I had a great time, feel really rested, happy to be back, but had a really good time with the family. My in-laws are out near the New Hampshire border, so they're in the White Mountains, and we love being out there. We get to do a lot of hiking. They're right next to like literally not even a half mile, I think, to this awesome lake called Keyser Lake, which has got a beautiful beach on it. So we did a lot of like hanging out on the beach and walking around and spending time outdoors. And I also I didn't get to play with it, but I want to share it because I was really stoked. My father-in-law, Virgil, was excited to share that he got an FJ Cruiser. This is a 2011, I believe 2011 or 2012. I threw this up on social media because I just loved, I mean, FJs are cool, right? Like FJ Cruisers are awesome, sort of flawed vehicles, you know, sort of a dressed up 4Runner talk about great engines that like, that I don't know, is the 4 liter a great engine or is it a like just a long lived lump that you can't kill?
Well, I mean, considering it came before the 3.5 liter, which I think is the worst truck engine ever to be put into a truck. I love the 4 liter. It's just big torque, just a big old, I love it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was super fun. Unfortunately, my wife got to drive it. She took it on a quick errand. And then for whatever reason, between kids and vacationing and Bud Lights, like I just never got behind the wheel of it. I'll have to do it next time. But
yeah, that's weird, man.
It's got higher mileage, but it, like I said, I love the color. It's got the plain like black cloth interior, nice spec. And I think they're really enjoying it too. And also, as somebody pointed out when I put this up too, three windshield wipers, like the three windshield wipers is something you always forget unless you're an owner. And then you see it again and you're like, oh, this is wonderful and maybe terrible every time I have to replace these. I'm not sure, but it's a cool truck for sure.
I love that Toyota went from, like, in the early days of FJ Cruiser, they were all yellow and blue and just like, they looked like little toy remote control cars or like little Barbie Dreammobiles. And then in the later days, they went with like this dark tactical green or like the like olive drab or, you know, just like they like went really hard into like the muted, like military style colors. Cause I don't know. I feel like they like knew what they were getting into. They're like the first round of buyers are going to be personality hires. And then the second round of buyers are going to be off-roaders. Yeah. And like, they nailed that like product cadence real well with the colorway.
It really fits too. Like I was joking that this could almost be an LL Bean edition. It would need some sort of touch in the interior, but this color is like right on brand for LL Bean. And obviously we're in Maine anyway, so we're talking about it, but this is such a good pick. I still have issues with my only issue with this car always, other than the, you know, fuel consumption and like lack of acceleration if you need it, is the rear visibility. And honestly, it's terrible. Back in it and it is really bad, but it's also one of those things that like, you've got big mirrors in this one, you've got a backup camera, like you adjust to it pretty quickly. Last time I was on, I talked about the Huracan Sturato. So maybe my bar for poor rear visibility has been
lowered. Artificially lowered a little bit.
It's so perfect for a place where the place where they live, right? It doesn't make sense for a lot of people, but like, it's not like they're going off-roading, but just to live in the country in Maine, like the roads have got crazy crowning on them and are crumbly. You're off on gravel and dirt a lot of the times. Yeah. They have to get up to a property that like they actually have a little bit of a climb on a shitty, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear or not, but on a crappy road to get to. So like there's real utility in a vehicle like this in day-to-day life. And it's not, and it, you know, like reasonable towing and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, that was a solid choice on their part. And it's going to last them forever. I don't know how old your wife's parents are, but my parents are always like, every time they shop, they get really morbid. And they're like, this is probably going to be the last car that we buy.
Yeah, we have that conversation.
and this could very well be. I mean, your wife's parents could be in their 60s, and this could very well be the last car that they buy. That thing's just going to be on the road forever.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he my father-in-law likes cars a lot, so he might juggle a few here or there, but... speaking of buying used off-roaders and or other things, we thought it would be fun today. Again, you guys talked a little bit about off-roading last week, had a good conversation. We're like we talked about at the top of the episode, like our partners over on the retail side of Car ID are deep in this cool summer event called ID Days. So there are lots of big sales and stuff going on. And we were talking to them and thinking about like, you know, we can create kind of a cool podcast concept around talking about some of that, basically. And then the other piece of this is our good friends at a previous job, Chris Smith and Chris Bruce, used to do a podcast called Rambling About Cars that we really loved. They often did a cheap car challenge type thing. So we thought, why not bring those two things together and create a little bit of a challenge around building a cheap, $10,000 is pretty cheap for an Overlander, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that fair to say? Yeah. I know people spend lots of like big dollars on serious rigs that can go anywhere and kind of, you know, like sleep 20 and cross them out and things like that. But we wanted the budget to be a little bit more reasonable. Perhaps if you're watching, you've gone through the same exercise. So we stuck with $10,000, which I think is a popular figure for this. And I don't know about you, Brett. I was surprised at one, what you're able to put together for $10,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then two, how, like, I'm not a guy who's ever built an off-road SUV or truck.
Yeah.
Even just spending an hour doing this, now I want to. Right. Like, I immediately am like, oh, wait, this would be dope. If I actually did this. Even starting with a truck that I don't particularly care for, like as a new thing or as an OEM thing. So that's the preamble. We've each got, the rules are thus, we've got $10,000 to spend. the vehicle that we buy has to be within our region, roughly speaking. So it's, you know, sort of fair, I guess. We have I said you've got to spend at least some money on parts, right? Yeah. Or accessories or something for this. Although I think turns out that wasn't a huge challenge.
Nope.
And then you have to be able to sleep in it. That's the last bit. So I don't know if that actually qualifies as an overlander, but I think that you could go camping in either of the setups that we have. So, all right. Well, you want to talk about your truck, your vehicle first? I keep saying truck, but.
I would love to. And here's the problem with my my choices this week is you know how you said that your bar was a little bit artificially lowered because of the Huracan Sturato?
Yeah.
Mine was very much artificially raised with, I don't know if I can present for some reason.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wait, never mind. We're good. Mine was very much artificially raised because I spent the weekend with this. The GMC Canyon AT4X AEV edition.
Yeah.
This is just like the meanest truck that they make. It's got 35-inch tires, full like boron steel skid plates all the way underneath. Like just an absolutely incredible machine. And we took out up a trail that I've always been scared to try, for like especially in a press car where you got to be mindful of damage. We took it up this trail and it just kind of was like a non-issue the whole way through. So this was a $67,000 truck, and if you could possibly make the case that a mid-sized truck could be worth $67,000, I think this one would do it. So this was my weekend. Had a great time in this, and then I get to work this week, and I'm told that I have to spend $10,000, a seventh of that money, and it was just kind of a challenge. So
that truck is so awesome, by the way. Just as an aside, like I've now been in. Like, let's see, the AEV partnership with GM stuff started with the Chevy Bison, I think in 2018, 19, something like that.
Yeah.
So I believe I've been in just about every product that GM has done with the AEV, like collabs and parts on it. All of them are killer, right? They look good. They go anywhere. I haven't been on a trail like that one with it, but even like the big, the HD truck, I think it was a GMC 2500 that has the AEV package on it was like remarkably capable.
Yeah. So, no, it's ridiculous the amount of capability that gets built into these things. Like this was,
wow, nice.
The photos cannot capture. This one does the best job of doing the most. But like it was like gut wrenching. Like every wheel you dropped, you just were like, "Oh, we're gonna go over." But then of course you don't because cars are capable. Blah 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 blah. Right. Like it was incredible. It was an absolute billy goat. The one pedal driving was really nice. So like when you're in low range, you can it'll automatically apply the brakes whenever you lift off the throttle. So you can kind of just dial in the perfect amount of throttle. Great, just a great truck all around. My choice for this one, I suspect, would be a little bit less impressive, just right out of the box.
Again, lower price point.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. We're looking at a tenth the price. Let's see if it's going to share for you. Come on, baby. There we go.
Yeah.
Looking at a tenth of the... Oh, no, wait. So, okay, so here's the problem. This isn't the actual one. Love it. Great truck. This one's in Portland. You already read me to filth about it earlier.
2002 Isuzu Trooper S in Portland. Yes, that would be cheating. I know that Los Angeles has a large metro area. I do not believe it extends to Oregon. So we're gonna be doing that
again. My bad. Okay, sorry. Hold on. Let me give you the real one. The people who are listening are just so annoyed at us right now. There we go. Okay, so this is the actual vehicle.
Ooh.
Still an Isuzu Trooper. In far less impressive condition. This one's a 1992.
Yeah.
You can see there's definitely some like existing trail rash or probably, you know, around the town rash on the car already.
Yeah.
But the interior on it is, it has a Life is Good spare wheel cover. Love that.
Of course. Yeah. Sold.
Truly. The interior on it though is kind of amazing. So these back seats, like they look perfect. They look like they've never been used. It's got this like beautiful 90s like mouse fur fabric that we talked a little bit about last week that Kyle and I both would wish would make a comeback. Part-time two-speed transfer case. You got four low, four high, and two high, which is exactly what you want with overlanding. You don't want to be burning gas when you don't have to, but you also want to be able to get down into four low.
Yeah,
this is kind of my pick. And it's got the 158,000 miles on it, which is not a ton for this engine. It's got a 3.2 liter twin cam Isuzu V6. I had this engine in my, I had a Honda Passport a few years ago, and it had like 240,000 miles, and it still ran okay. It wasn't perfect, but it was fine. The only issue with these is they eat axle shafts like nobody's business. Like, there's something about the front axle shafts are made out of like probably Play-Doh or maybe something a little bit more robust, but not much. And so these eat axle shafts like crazy. So my absolute first modification would be to get a nice set of ID Select CV joint axle shafts.
Okay.
The one that I'm getting has both the inner and the outer axle shaft. So you really do just get something complete, which is really nice. And then the, you know, very quickly following that up is this manual locking hub. The other issue with these is the automatic locking hubs are, they're spring operated like a lot of automatic locking hubs. The issue is, since the axle shafts are so weak, when the like axle shaft itself is spinning and it catches up to the hub that is spring loaded, it'll shear the end of that axle shaft off. So getting manual locking hubs is a very easy way to avoid that. So manual locking hubs there. Those are kind of like the like durability upgrades that you want to have before you hit the road.
Yeah.
And then we get into the fun stuff. Then we get into Car ID has a really fun wheel and tire package builder where you select your car, select your wheels, select your tires, and then Car ID will mount and balance the tires using Hunter Road Force balancing machines, which are awesome. They balance the wheels against the counterweight of the tires, so it's really nice. You don't have to use as many wheel weights. I love these wheels, the American Racing AR23 wheels. They kind of have this like weird 1980s, early 90s off-road vibe that I think would look perfect on something as big and boxy as a Trooper.
Yeah, super chunky. I don't know. They're one piece. They sort of look a little bit like a two-piece wheel.
They do, yeah.
Spokes. Yeah, I think that they would look great. I mean, they definitely look great. I don't know that I've ever seen a Trooper. This is funny. I mean, I'm sure that they exist. I don't know that I've ever seen a Trooper with like serious, like cool off-road wheels. You know,
let me see if I can just Google it. American Racing.
That's super neat. But those are great wheels. You're going to find a little bit of commonality in these builds too. And I don't know. We certainly didn't plan it ahead of time, but there might be a similar wheel on my on my build.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a little example of what we might be looking at. Let me try if I can find one. Never mind. It's fine. They'll look good. Just trust me. They look good on that Jeep there. They'll look good on the Trooper.
Yeah. If anybody out there has an Isuzu Trooper and has put some aftermarket wheels on it, please, by all means, let us know. Share us share a photo. We've got Red Wolf in the comments, by the way, saying that he is sitting here learning and not annoyed. That's good.
We're not
annoying people who are watching is really goal number one here. Learning. I mean, what are we? Geniuses? Yeah.
No, we're not. We should not be. You should not be learning from us, by the way. Like, that's maybe a poor choice, but, you know, good luck. Okay, so the other picks that I've got here are, let's see if it'll share for you. I've got BF Goodrich All-Terrain TA wheels, tires mounted on those American Racing wheels. Like I said, you get the free mounting and balancing. And then I'm also going to do a little practicality upgrades as well. We've got wheels and tires are probably the most important thing that you can do to an off-roader in terms of traction. We've got some durability upgrades, and now we need to make it a little bit more convenient. So I added a Safari roof cargo basket. Since one of the rules is you have to be able to sleep in the thing, I'm thinking that all of the stuff inside the truck probably needs to go outside of it, you know, at some point in time. So I've got a Safari roof cargo basket. Could probably do like a lockable rooftop if you wanted to. And then again, since we are sleeping in the thing, I picked the Airbeds XUV seats down air mattress. So this is an air mattress that has cutouts for wheel wells. So you can kind of fit the thing and it kind of expands to take up the whole inside of the cargo area, which is kind of nice. So we're going to do that, and I'm going to be able to sleep good and comfy. And
I have a question, Brett. Let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
Because I think that I missed it when we were cycling through Troopers. Sure. How much are you paying for your vehicle?
Sorry. Yep. The vehicle to start with is $34.99. It's in San Diego, so it's about a 3-hour drive from me.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of headroom with that $34.99 to do a lot of pretty cool mods thing. Before we even get into like suspension lift kits and stuff like that, like there's a lot of headroom to just kind of make it like a good baseliner.
I don't want to interrupt your build, which is great, like going through that stuff. But did you, and I know that we did this a little bit quickly today, but strategically, would you, if you were doing this for real with your $10,000, do you think that you would rather err on the side of like a vehicle that you believe mechanically is reliable? Obviously you don't want to buy something that's going to fall apart unless it's something you're going to replace, like spend less money on the vehicle and then upgrade it to your spec. Or would you rather cheat the other way and spend more money on the base vehicle and have it be a little bit less exactly what you want via the upgrade route?
I'm definitely on the former. And that's speaking a little bit from experience. I bought a Lexus LX 450 a couple of years ago, and it had a lot of modifications done. I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before. It had a ton of modifications done that are kind of just like thorns in my side now. Like it's got a big bull bar with fog lights that aren't aimed right and are not able to be aimed. And it's got like a lift kit that's fine, but is kind of just a little bit harsher riding than I want it to be for what the truck ends up doing most of the time. So I would probably rather go the opposite direction. The thing that I really like about this particular Isuzu Trooper, and no offense to the owner at all, I like that it seems like it's fairly well sorted mechanically. I like a clean interior for sure. I don't care that much about the exterior of an off-roading vehicle. So I really like that this one is kind of like pre-scruffed and like ready to rumble. And I like that, you know, the first one that I showed you from Portland was in mint condition and it was $7,000. So this is half the cost for largely the same mileage, literally the same powertrain. And probably similar levels of reliability. You just have a janky exterior that you're already going to jank up anyway when you're going out overlanding and off-roading.
Yeah. So I tend to agree. I think for the most, like for this, for something that I was going to take off-road, for something that I was going to like really go overlanding and go camping in a lot or things like that, I would rather buy something where I'm not concerned with the resale value because I'm going to modify it anyways. Right.
Yeah, so totally.
My expectation is, you know, certainly there are some things that you can do in terms of modification that may like eventually sort of increase the value of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But like, I think the general rule is that the stuff that makes it more custom to you, you might enjoy it a lot more. You might use it a lot more, but it's not necessarily going to add the like value back into the vehicle. Right.
Yeah,
so completely. I'd rather already take something that where I know that the value has bottomed out.
Yeah.
I think cosmetic stuff fits the bill nicely there. So
yeah, that's kind of like the brass ring for an off-roader is you want it to run well, you want it to be nice, you want it to be comfortable and easy to live with. But the exterior, like in my opinion, is the first thing to go. You might as well save some money by getting something that's already a little bit beaten up.
Yeah.
So I really like this pick for me, you know, in like a purely purely selfish way. I think this one would be really cool. Yeah, and then the only other two mods that I added, I didn't do a lift kit. I didn't do, exterior body protection or anything like that. I just added a roof basket and the interior. And the grand total for all that stuff was $62.75. So we got the truck for $34.99. The biggest single ticket item was the wheel and tire package, which came out to $1,783.91. You get free shipping under ID days right now on every wheel and tire package, which is nice. And then the Safari basket was a little spendy. It was $500, but, it's the biggest one that I could find on the Car ID website. And I think, you know, in this case, size matters because I'm going to be moving stuff between the basket and the cargo area pretty regularly. And, $6,800. So, you know, I could get into it. I could do some minor, you know, some like gentle wheeling on it, and I could kind of upgrade it in the future if I feel like it needs it, and kind of like give myself a good base platform to start from.
Love it. And sorry, your final figure was 60,
68 something. Let me.
You have tons of money left to spend too.
Yeah.
You've got money in your pocket for a nicer sleeping bag and like a cool camp stove or whatever else like you want to have when you're going out camping, right?
Well, and I also had the thought that like
you're going to spend a lot on gas.
Yeah, in that car, you're going to spend a ton on gas, and you're going to want to stop and take a shower at a nice motel bathroom every now and again. So you got some money to do that too.
Right, right. I love it. I love it. Well, so same idea, very different route though. my pick, and again, like we chatted about this a little bit ahead of time, but one of the fun things about like the rule about keeping the rule of things have to be local. Like honestly, West Coast is, it's not really local enough for the lawyer in me, but would be fine because it's just not, you know, the Midwest or the Northeast where you're dealing with
right.
like very different economic environments where, you know, stuff is worth more essentially. And then also like different conditions, like everything else being equal, I would love to buy a truck out of California and then bring it and then build it. In fact, I might do that. But when you've got a shop locally, you save some money. Prices are a little bit cheaper in Southeast Michigan, presumably, than they are in LA, right? So,
right.
But that changes the equation a little bit. So I'm going with availability. I'm going with like being very cost conscious. And I'm also going with the fact that I'm 6'5", right? So sleeping in the thing, there are a lot of vehicles that I could sleep in, like, you know, being a little bit scrunched or without much issue, but I wanted something that maybe I wouldn't have to think about that much. And as I'm even going through this exercise, it's not like I didn't do the sort of spec walk to measure it out, but the Avalanche is in many ways a vehicle that I find ridiculous. So this is a for those of you who might be listening after the fact, my pick is a 2003 Chevy Avalanche 4x4. It's got the Z71 package. And it's in Southeast Michigan. It's in lovely Mount Clemens, Michigan. There's the rear pass through to that sort of shorty bed so that you can have this much longer space. And I believe that like, even if it weren't totally comfortable, you know, my little feet could be going through the pass through if you had and you could make a mattress slide all the way through there. So I think that I would be well accommodated in terms of the length that I would need.
It's an 8-foot bed. It's a 4x8 in total. So like,
They
designed the thing to fit 4x8 sheets completely within the tailgate like area. So yeah, you got tons of space.
Yeah, it really is. It's like clever packaging, despite the fact that it's sort of, I don't know, like maybe it's different. Maybe it's because there are so many like Chevy and GM brands are so big around here. Maybe there are different vibes. Like if you are an Avalanche owner driver in, you know, New York or Florida or California, but it's a certain type of dude, largely speaking, out here. But that's okay for this. That's okay. And I also love this early GMT 800 version. You know, with all of the body cladding.
Yeah.
Our colleague Gabrielle was joking, saying one of us needed to take an Aztec for this challenge when we were first working out today. And I think this is not the Aztec, but it definitely has big Aztec vibes with
real
all
close.
Of that.
Yeah, real close.
Faded. Faded. I think that cladding was supposed to be like a whole shade and a half darker when it was new, and now it's like faded out, like UV'd out to nothing. So
just dandruff sloughing off it every time you look at it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the car, I don't know that it's in nearly as nice condition as yours cosmetically. From an interior perspective, from the exterior, you can see like it's got a real scabby like fender. You know, that the cladding is probably needs some work. There's a disconcerting photo in the back where you've just got like water pouring out from the bed or under the rear headlight, but it's $2,500. It's $2,500 on it's got 145,000 miles on it. This is, like I said, Z71 package car. So it's not like incapable out of the box in theory. And it's got a, you know, long running, GM 3.5 liter V8. 5.3 liter V8, my general operating principle around something like this is stuff is definitely going to break. I don't know what it will be. It's going to be the parts to fix it are going to be plentiful and generally speaking cheap. Or if it's something that I need to actually have worked on, the labor is also going to be reasonably cheap. Right.
Completely. Yeah, absolutely. This is the kind of thing that like any like dude in a like desert gas station could work on. Like you break down in the middle of nowhere, Nevada or Utah, and anyone that you come across is going to be able to work on this thing. So
absolutely. Well, that is the goal for sure. That you know, largely speaking, it doesn't have to be me. So So I'm only in for $2,500 to start. I've got plenty of money to do the build. Let me stop sharing and switch this. Oh wait, can I just do this? Let's see. This, no, I can't.
Let me get your link queued up.
I got you. We are opening my cart, and here we go. So, starting with wheels, I actually don't know if this is the correct place to start, and it's I did go with a wheel tire package, same as you, to begin. The overall like running gear on the truck looked a little bit tired, so let's give it some attitude. Let's give it some meteor rubber, right? And like you, I've got a set of 17-inch American Racing wheels. These are the AR-172 Baja one piece in satin black. They've got that, you know, kind of like telephone dial hole pattern around it. I think they look pretty cool. Black wheels on a black truck, makes it pretty easy. And then, set of Mickey Thompson's, these are the Mickey Thompson Baja Legend EXPs. They're 35-inch tires. So a couple things here. One is you've done a lot more off-roading than me. And obviously like a lot more sort of building this space. I haven't actually actively shopped for off-road, for like serious off-road tires before.
Sure.
My lizard brain always wants me to buy Mickey Thompson's because I think they're cool.
Yeah.
I like the brand and I like the tread pattern usually. So I don't actually know if this is a smart decision. And as I was like going through this, I realized like, oh, the lift kit isn't really optional in this case, because I think even with a 6-inch lift, like there's a decent chance that you may have to do at least some of that body clad removal, but we have a solution for that.
This is a great set of rolling stock. I love Mickey Thompson tires too. Like I've never actually owned a set, but, when you go out in the desert in California, every other buggy and like custom build and like stripped down machine is wearing Mickey Thompson's. They're just like perfect for this kind of off-roading, this like sandy, like wide open. This is a good choice. I'm very excited for this. This is a good build so far.
Okay. So I've got those and same as you, we're looking at, let's see, same deal. The wheel and tire packages are great anyways. Like the tires come pre-balanced, pre-mounted. And we've got, I believe, free shipping on the wheel tire packages and ID days right now. So I'm in for close to $2,576 and some change on wheels and tires, which honestly, considering that this is a gigantic upgrade, doesn't seem that bad. Now, it's also more than the cost of the vehicle. So, so I'm instantly in a new category of truck owner at this point, but that's okay. I'm fine with that.
At least they're like, it's like a functional set. It's not, they're not like 22s with rubber bands. It's like a functional set of tires.
That's right. All right, so moving on, we've got the installation and we've got the mounting and balancing. We'll skip this a little bit because we've got the lift kit that we need, right? So again, trying to get the truck up high enough so that like front and rear, so that I can actually fit those meats like under the wheel wells. So here we've got, I don't know anything about this brand. This is just one that I was able to find on the site that fits, like is a guaranteed fit for the 03 Avalanche. It's from a brand called Zone Off-Road, and it's doing a 6-inch lift up front and a 5.5-inch in the rear, which is why I said I'm not 100% sure. I think that we're saying the wheel tire package is guaranteed fit with a 6-inch lift on the vehicle, which, by the way, that's kind of cool, too, that, like, that functionality is baked into being able to find stuff. Like, you can say, like, I've got this truck, you know, this year make model, but I also have done a 3-inch lift on it, and it'll sort of sort your options with the wheel tire packages based on that. I didn't know that actually going into this, and I think it's cool. All that said, according to my kit, I'm only getting 5.5 inches in the rear. So we may have to do a little cosmetic modification here.
You're probably more okay in the rear because the rear isn't going to flex as much anyway, and the wheels don't turn. So like you could probably cheat. If you're going to cheat, you could cheat in the rear. So I think you're still good.
Yeah, I'm trying to be transparent with the viewers and the listeners that I may not have checked every box completely. Like if I was sitting talking to one of our experts about it, they might give me some pause for thought. But we'll stick with it. So
we're not experts. Contrary to Red Wolf's comment, we're not experts, and you shouldn't be learning from us. So go ahead and put that 5.5-inch lift under your Avalanche.
This is another big chunk of change. I think it's probably worthwhile overall to get the kind of ability and again, like to get the wheels and tires that I want on it. So that's $1,927.
Well, it looks like you're getting like gas shocks and exactly. And like the torsion key and everything like that. Like you're getting everything you need to actually make it work. So that's good.
That's another thing that I like, again, if this really was my personal project, like I realized that you could buy a lot of the components for the kits bespoke, like you can get individual springs and et cetera, but it would be more comfortable for me, especially somebody who would be like, you know, reasonably knowledgeable, but never having done the experience before, to get the package that has everything that I need to do to get the job done. Right. Definitely. So I'm willing to pay a little bit more for that, if that indeed is the case. Now, let's go back to my list. From an interior perspective, oh, here's another one that I think is important. Again, we are overlanding potentially in very different climates. Old cars tend to have crappy batteries, especially when they're $2,500. And if I'm doing this, like my go-to would be driving this up to northern Michigan, right? The northern UP or the upper peninsula, the northern LP or the upper peninsula. So I want a good battery. I want a battery with lots of cold cranking amps and lots of power. And we've got this one, this Odyssey Extreme Series battery. It's expensive. It's $384, which is, you know, like not inexpensive. It's a fair amount of money for a battery, but I can't remember. I think it said this is like 850 cold cranking amps or 800 cold cranking amps. So it's like really serious, and it's not going to leave me stranded if I'm driving, you know, later in the fall and we have a serious cold snap, which is, you know, a real fear. So what else do we have? I went with some Carhartt seat covers up front too, not because I thought the interior was in a bad condition, but because, I think that seat covers in a use case like this are probably pretty helpful because you're going to be dirty getting in and out of the truck. Like if you are trying to retain any of the original interior stuff, these are really great. The Carhartt stuff is awesome. Like, you know, it's a little bit like the same material as like Carhartt workwear. So it wears really rough. It looks pretty cool. These are gravel, which is kind of a medium gray color. So they're not going to clash completely with the black interior, the rest of the black interior. And it's another one too, where I was looking at, we've got a discount right now on Carhartt products in general and free shipping on these as well too. So you're getting it's a good time to buy these as well. So I'm only buying them for the front, thinking that, again, sort of what you talked about with your roof rack, right? The rear is either going to be there folded down to allow me to sleep, or I'm going to have gear back there. So I'm a little bit less concerned with new seat covers for the rear space.
Definitely.
What else do I have? Those are $360 with 5% off. Well, we'll get to the bed. I'm forgetting my favorite one. For some reason, that came off my shopping cart. But
go find it.
I've got a mattress. This is from Rightline Gear, 76-inch. Although I went with a smaller one, and now you've reassured me I could probably go with a larger version of this mattress, which I think is like $10 more. This is a universal fit, but I can stick it in the bed of the Avalanche, and I've got a soft spot to sleep at the very least. That's going to be important because at this point, let me just look at my tally. I am up to $8,588.53. So I have a little bit of money to play with. One impediment that I've run into is the Chevy Avalanche getting a topper on it. It's a little bit difficult, right? So I don't have a great solution right now. So this might be more of a either sleep out under the stars kind of a situation, which is not great, again, considering the location that we were talking about. Or I've got to do a little bit more research and find out if there's something that's more of a universal sort of like roof tent solution, something that could work on the Avalanche that doesn't have to work specifically with a bed. So this is a little bit of a flaw in my game, I'm not going to lie.
I just dropped in our private chat in the podcast room, I just dropped a link that might solve your problem. I don't know if it's exactly what you want, but it's a Tuxedo soft rolling tonneau cover.
Yeah.
So it would at least keep the car, if you had the mattress in there and if you had like the glass window in place, if you didn't remove the glass window, which I'm not sure if you could do on the mid-gate actually. Do you have to remove the glass window to fold it?
I think you do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But at least you'd have like the overhang of like the flying buttresses off the roof and then the tonneau cover over your feet, theoretically keeping you dry and helping you stay somewhat insulated and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I've been struggling to try and share this one, but yeah, that would be something over my head, right? Like is really ideal, or over my feet is really what you're looking for. So, and that's $579 before you get into the specifics of it. So I definitely have the money to do something like that. No problem. The other one, I don't need to do a share screen for this, but again, going into the cosmetics of the vehicle, like a little bit scabby paint, doesn't look particularly great, and we're taking it off road anyways. So I went ahead and priced out, I'll find the brand and put it in the notes later, but a rattle can solution. So we've got like spray on like rattle can bed liner, right? That I've seen this done very recently when I went and bought my WRX. The guy that I bought it from had Econoline? Yeah, I think they had an old Econoline that they had turned into a big like off-road van, and they had done the bed liner all over it, like presumably a white van to begin with. It doesn't look great in a lot of situations. People try to do this a lot, but I think if you've got, you know, a little bit of lift, great wheel tire package on it, like something that we like conceivably go off road, and you're using it to sort of like cover up, mask in a weird way, all that body cladding. Or if you need to do a little bit of a cutaway, to get the rear tires to fit, I think that would be a great solution too. So
are you spraying it over the body cladding too?
Yeah, why not? I mean,
whole truck. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I haven't looked into the chemistry of this yet, so I'm not sure that it would adhere in a way that I would be happy with. But for the sake of argument, let's just say yes. Let's just say this is a backyard project that Seth and the boys do over a couple of beers, and we figure it out on the fly. And that was surprisingly expensive. That stuff is not that cheap. It's like $50 a can. And when I was looking for like a real rough estimate of how many you would need, I was figuring something like 13, 14, 15 cans of it to get the truck. So
jeez.
That's another that I put $750 in the budget for that. And that brought me up to that 8,500, 8,600 mark. So
again, still a little room for some, you know, some like trail repairs if you need to make them, still a little room for some modifications down the road if you decide you need to change something up. That's a solid choice.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it would be fun to drive. I would take it camping for a weekend for sure. I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's the smartest one or not, but
I have like a really inconvenient appreciation for the Avalanche. Every time I see one, like I want to just kind of hate it more than I do, but I just think they're really funky, cool. Like it's like that peak like 1990, like late 90s, early 2000s era of car design. That's just so, especially if you got they did a North Face edition of the Avalanche for like at least one or 2 years. And it had like waterproof North Face style, like seat covers, and the interior was like green and yellow, because why wouldn't it be green and yellow? Like it was just a lot. And like, I think it still had, I can't remember. I might be mixing the Avalanche up with the Aztec, but I think there was I know the Aztec had it, but I think the Avalanche did too, where the center console was removable and it was a cooler. Am I making that up?
I don't recall that, but it's been, so again, it's been probably what, 10, no more than that. 13, 20. 14 years since I've been in an Avalanche. I think they sold them for, like, I think the last Avalanche was 2010 or 2011 or something like that. So, but I don't remember that. I don't remember that. I know that for a time it was very popular if you're able to put coolers like wherever you could in the vehicle. Yeah. The one that always comes to mind is the Ford Flex, like having the big refrigerator.
I forgot about that.
But like all of that stuff is really neat. And I do appreciate this era of GM. It's obviously having a little bit of resurgence, or just like those of us amongst us who are into cars and maybe like in the Radwoodish space, like are looking at these vehicles a little bit differently. Plus they're just getting cooler as we get older. And we remember like how neat we thought things were in 2003. So
I remember my scout leader in, 2003 to 2007 had a series of Avalanches. He started with the one with the body hardware, which like that nasty plastic. He got that one. And then 2 years later, he traded it in on one without the body hardware. And then the last one that he had before I aged out of scouts was like second generation with like the Chevy Tahoe front end. And that thing was like a luxurious truck. That was like comfortable, like big, comfortable truck. It had none of the like Avalanche, like tackiness about it. It was just a big, comfortable SUV that happened to have an open bed. It was really cool.
Yeah, so, they. My memory of driving them when they were new, again, like out of the media fleet, was they were a lot more like driving a Suburban than they were like driving a Silverado, right? Yeah. Like just a lot more sound deadening. The ride was a little smoother. Mostly it was NVH stuff, but they still had capabilities. I honestly think that's why people really like them, right? Yeah. They got into them because you had some functionality of a truck and you still had the SUV experience. And for a time, maybe they look cool. They fell out of vogue. And I guess based on what you're saying, maybe they're coming back into vogue a little bit too, as long as they don't, you know, like rattle can bedliner. But
that's the only part of your build that I'm going to have a really hard time with. I'm not going to lie. I think a lifted Avalanche with a rattle can bedliner is just a whole vibe that, you know, that you're really buying into, that you're choosing, you're opting that vibe. And I wish
it's very tactical. Very, very tactical. You know,
it is. It's definitely giving like prepper energy for sure. You know,
what are the cars that you're allowed to rattle can bedliner and not get labeled a prepper? Is there anything?
No, I don't think there is.
What about a Mirage?
A Mirage? A Mitsubishi Mirage?
Yeah.
That just feels like prepper cosplay at that point, then, which is maybe even worse.
I don't know. Maybe there's not an answer to that, but. For those of you who are watching, if you guys are checking this out on YouTube and you've got good ideas for what you would use to build your cheap Overlander, your 10 grand or under Overlander, please let us know. We'd love to share those on an upcoming episode.
Drop it in a build sheet. If you want to give us all the details, give us all the details, give us a price, everything, and then drop it in an email to tips@carid.com. And we will do our best to feature it in an upcoming episode. It'd be really fun to see what you guys are thinking.
We'll just continue our streak of talking about off-road topics for sure. Really? No, I don't know what we're gonna do next, but maybe we'll take a foray back. We've talked about this before. We've done a lot of performance stuff. We've done a lot of car stuff. So we're trying to make sure that all of our truck love gets expressed in the podcast as well, and all of our off-roady things as well. So
I mean, to that end, if anyone listening has an idea for something that you want to have a $10,000 dream build on, that would be great too. You know, we're bandying around before the show, we're thinking maybe we'll do like a cheap track car, or maybe we'll do a cheap like parent mobile, like a nicely accessorized minivan or what have you. If you've got an idea for a cool $10,000 cheap build, drop it in the comments or send us an email.
Oh my god, dream minivan build would be amazing.
I've played this game with myself many, many times already. I already know what my answer is going to be.
I mean, but the thing is, you can combine the two. I didn't even think about that when I was looking at it, but like, I've had the thought before that safariing out, like basically any 20-year-old minivan would be a really cool thing to do.
Well, and honestly, like, overlanding does not have to be like going through the Rubicon or visiting Moab. Right. Like, it can literally just be finding really cool remote ghost towns on gravel roads. And you could do that in a front or all wheel drive minivan very, very easily. And they make lift kits for like the Toyota Sienna. It has a lift kit too. Like, there's stuff you could definitely do.
Yeah. I think that the like overlanding has people who understand it, and our friend Red Wolf, who's watching and commenting, says that he's completely new to overlanding. You're not the first. I think there's been a lot of conversation over the years. Like, guys like Brett and I have written a lot about overlanding because it's been a thing really since COVID. It's become more of a thing that people like to do with their spare time just to get out. Another way to think about it is just car camping, right? And this is something that's existed for a really long time. You know, I went car camping when I was 19 with my buddy in a 68 Volkswagen Beetle, basically, because we just had the stuff there and it was easy to do. Now, whether or not your tent attaches to the car in a neat way that makes for a cool photo on Instagram or not, like, is sort of beside the point. But like, you're going somewhere that's not your home, that's not a motel or hotel, right? Like, to stay somewhere, presumably somewhere sort of out of doors, so that you're exploring sort of natural things that are cool. But for the most part, you really don't need to have. It's awesome to have, you know, an old built Isuzu Trooper to do that in, so that you can go wherever you want out west. But you can also do it in, you know, I could do it in my WRX, right? Like, you could do it in a Corolla if you wanted to, and you're a little bit careful about where you went, right? So,
see that, and that's another funny thing. So when we took this GMC off-roading this weekend, The road, the trail to get to the trail that we did is like pretty washed out, pretty rutted, pretty nasty. Like there's definitely some spots, you know, even on like the wide 15 mile an hour service road to get there, there's some spots where you have to like cross like a rivulet that's been cut completely across the road. And we got to like the parking lot before you get to the actual big trails. And there was a Nissan 350Z in the parking lot. So like, if you're careful and if you know what you're doing, and if you maybe don't mind scraping your front bumper a little bit, you can do car camping in anything, like absolutely anything. So, you know, whatever you get, like applying a few key modifications can make just about any vehicle pretty capable of like at least some light overlanding car camping, outdoor adventuring. So
in 2016, I did an amazing trip with Subaru, that where we drove like a lot of Subarus then line up through Patagonia. Right. So it was like,
Like
700 miles or something. Like it was over 1,000 kilometers. I know that. And it was this really like, most of it was on dirt roads, right? We started, on pavement. I'm forgetting the name of El Calafate, I think is the name of the town. It's like a hiking mountain town. And then we drove all the way south and then took the ferry over, and ended up in Ushuaia, like the very, very dead end of South America. It's incredible. So we're in this, like the Andes in the background, like on these crazy dirt roads that are really rutted. And it looks like nobody is around for hundreds and hundreds of miles. And you're flying through like rocks going everywhere and just having this like huge adventure. And then every so often, every half an hour, you'd see like whatever the South American version of like a Chevy Aveo is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like going at double your speed in like headed towards you in the opposite direction. Just, you know, cause he lives there. Like there's nobody better at negotiating the roads that you're talking about than the guy who lives right there. And no matter what they're driving.
It's so funny. Like you just don't need nearly as much car as you think you do for a lot of those situations. You maybe just have to care a little bit less about the car that you're driving.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's great to have cool capability. And if you're like, again, if you're nerdy like us, it's just fun to like transform a vehicle into something, even if you're only going to use it, you know, a few minutes of its life at its ultimate capability. That's why we like building fast cars and rugged trucks and things like that. But yeah, don't underestimate the Chevy Aveo if you're just willing to get it dented up and you don't care about your windscreen.
Oh man.
All right. Fully off topic. This has been great, Brett. Thanks again for joining me. Thanks everybody for watching. Yeah. Don't hesitate yet again to leave us a comment after the fact. We'd like very much for you to subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're watching this on YouTube so that you can get alerted when a new episode is about to go live. I would also love if you're into audio podcasts, if you're going on the road, go ahead, subscribe to us, and you can listen wherever you want, in your car, on your vacation, and we'll keep you entertained or do our best anyways. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Have a great week.
Have a good week, everyone.